This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum. We thank them for supporting this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo. Good afternoon, man. How are you today?
Man, good afternoon to you too, sir. I'm doing okay. It's the start of a new year. I think I mentioned last week that I've been battling a little bit of something. And went to the doctors this morning, so they gave me something to battle the something with.
Okay.
And so I'm very hopeful.
Congratulations. I hope they gave you some something really powerful to go against it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, man. I think, you know, in the end, it's just if you can't kick the cold, then you get the antibiotic and we'll see what ends up happening.
Right.
But one way or the other, man, I'm feeling good. This is, you know, it's beautiful weather out here.
Yeah.
Sunshiny Houston, Texas. What about you, man? How you doing?
Man, things are great. Yeah, I had a really good, New Year, and things were a lot of fun. I actually went to a state park here in Northeast Mississippi, Tishomingo State Park, with some good friends. And, man, did some hiking with the little baby. That was fun and kind of, adventurous, trying to, figure out the logistics there. Man, it was fun. New Year's Day, smoked my pipe. I was out, in the woods, and I'd found this tin of Greg Peace's Stonehenge Flake that I'd been sitting on for a while, and I just kind of forgotten about it. It was tucked away, and man, I opened the tin up, and the flakes in there were just so beautiful. And it's a Virginia-based tobacco, but that had some nice little crystals on there, and so was smoking that, and kind of got carried away that day. And when I did, I realized I was probably consuming more of that than I needed to because of the contents of my stomach. And man, it just crushed me. It nailed me. It was one of those things where I'd forgotten that tobacco is that strong. But man, it's funny because I had to working on some different tobaccos right now, kind of in a concert with our 50th anniversary, which this year is the Country Squire's 50th anniversary. And so I've been really trying to keep my palate very clean and, work on, some new recipes and some special stuff we're doing in relation to that. And it kind of jacked me up for 2 or 3 days. I was like, man, I just can't even do my job, Thanks, Greg. Right. But tobacco's so good. It's just one of those things. I think it nailed me a little bit. But, man, had a good New Year. And yeah, we've got a Tolkien tobacco sale going on right now, and we got flooded with orders. And so, if you're listening and placed an order for one of our Tolkien themed blends, we're working on it. We're doing the best we can to get the tobacco out, but it is crazy. So just bear with us.
Yeah, run everybody down the name of each blend real quick, because there's one in particular. I got a quick question for you on it. Run those down.
Yeah. Okay. So we have King's Foil, we have Bag End, Rivendell, Second Breakfast, Old Toby, Green Dragon, and then we have a limited blend that's already gone. It was gone within like a day, if even that. And it's Smeagol, and we use some limited ingredients on that one that we were able to get our hands on, and just kind of had fun. And
it was just Bowser's Castle with another name. No, I'm just
right. I wish, man. Shoot. It was some limited ingredients that we got our hands on. We were like, well, let's make something fun with this, and we did. And of course, it was gone really quick. But that's them.
All right, very. So it was precious. It was
it,
precious.
It was
to everyone.
It was precious. Precious.
I know. The one that I was actually curious about though was King's Foil. What is that a direct reference to something in Tolkien?
King's Foil is a tobacco we came out with a couple years ago, I guess. You remember Caleb that worked for us, right?
Yeah.
And so Caleb was experimenting one day, and he was like, well, there was this, he was working on a Virginia based blend that had some dark fired Kentucky in it. And so he liked that. He liked the bright leaf Virginia that had more grassy, natural sugar flavor to it, with just a little bit of that pleasant bite. And then he liked the smokiness of the dark fired Kentucky. And he was like, man, this is good. I can smoke this all day. It's calming to me, that kind of thing. And he, was fellow Tolkien nerd like the rest of us. And so he named this particular blend Kingsfoil. Kingsfoil is also known as Athelas. It's the leaf that was brought in to Middle Earth and was used for like healing properties in the Fellowship of the Ring. But it actually is mentioned in the Fellowship of the Ring. So yeah, so that's where that comes from.
That's awesome, man. All right, well, good deal. Good deal. That was one that I was, that's a deep cut, but that's the beauty of, you know, getting creative with this. Cause I feel like, you know, everybody's got a second breakfast or maybe a Hobbit leaf or something of that
right,
nature.
Right. Man, we went deep. We went deep.
Yeah. Shout out to Caleb, the intern, man. That's awesome.
That's right.
Well, hey, we've got a great show planned this today, but first, a couple of housekeeping items. For the last couple of weeks, we've been mentioning this amazing fundraiser that's going on up north for Rob E., you know, prolific pipe smoker in the community who's combating stage 4 lymphoma. The club up there, or rather the folks in Grand Rapids, Michigan, are putting on a Smoke 'Em If You Got 'Em on International Pipe Smoking Day. That's February 20th. It's a $50 buy-in donation, no matter where you are, so that you can still participate in the raffle and then also just participate in supporting Rob. If you go over, be sure to email Cody DeWitt at gmail.com. That's Cody DeWitt at gmail.com for more information, and he can get you signed up there as well. So, you know, thoughts and prayers with Robbie, and big shout out to the guys up there that are supporting him through this really, really tough time. Man, we also have coming up in March, on March 28th, the Lunt to Remember. Now, this is a big deal.
Yeah.
This is the Country Squire Radio live event that you will not want to miss. There will be lunting. That is walking while smoking your pipe. There will be a live episode, possibly two live episodes of Country Squire
Radio. You never
know.
We make it froggy. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, I don't want to make any promises, but maybe one of those live episodes might be a Squire Select. And maybe there might be a way to participate in said Squire Select.
Boy, you're selling it hard, man. We hadn't even talked
about
this.
I'm just saying.
I mean, we're getting our friends together. It's a, you know, it's an opportunity to celebrate. Let's, I don't know. We'll think about it.
We'll bust open a bottle of the good stuff. You know, the really, really cheap good stuff. The bad stuff.
Old Charter.
The really Old Charter, man. That is the baptismal water
right.
of Country Squire.
Of the Country Squire, right. No, that's great, man. We are excited. A Lunt to Remember, man, in partnership with the International Lunting Society. Scott Beidler putting this together. We're so thrilled. And, man, LaFleur's Bluff State Park just right down the street from us. And if you've been a longtime listener, follower of the show, this would be a perfect time to make your pipe pilgrimage. We're doing this in conjunction with the shop's 50th anniversary. This is the year.
Yeah.
The Country Squire turns 50, and we are just have a whole host of things going on this year that we're doing in celebration of that. And so a Lunt to Remember, the proceeds for this are going to the Alzheimer's Foundation, which is a really great cause, and that's why the event is named A Lunt to Remember, kind of a point in honor of that. So really excited. But again, March 28th here in Jackson, Mississippi. You can find more information out at lunting.org. You can sign up for the event. It is a free event. You do have to pay for your own parking, but the raffles and items that we sell and things of that nature, all the proceeds from that will go to the Alzheimer's Foundation. So really, really excited about that.
Absolutely, man. It's going to be a blast. So definitely make your plans. Now, of course, we are here at the start of a new year, and things have now started to settle down, at least on my end, from, you know, as of today, the kids are back in school. Work is starting to get back into a normal routine, which is just a beautiful thing for myself, but also for those of you who have been desperately awaiting your Country Squire Radio Club membership cards and kind of the welcome pack that that comes with it. So for everybody who has been supporting the show at patreon.com/countrysquireradio, specifically over the last couple of weeks who have joined on, those are going out this week, which also means if you have not done so already, this is a great week to sign up. patreon.com/countrysquireradio, become a patron, become a club member, support the show, and yeah, if you do it this week, you'll get all the benefits immediately, instantly. This is prime real
which
estate,
which is a miracle. So,
yeah, it pretty much is. So yeah, so patreon.com/countrysquireradio is the place to do it. But John David, man, this is the start of a new year.
It is a new decade, Bo.
a new decade, 2020. Now that's debatable. We're not going to get into that debate, but I mean, like that, you know, some people say the new decade doesn't officially start till the ones. And really, if you're in the O's, that means you're closing out.
That's stupid. I'm against it.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Look, if anything, it just means you can celebrate the decade twice, but this is when we celebrate the start of a new decade. And here, as we jump into the 2020s, man, you know, being Country Squire Radio, being a pipe tobacco podcast, you know, it behooves us from time to time to take a look back, not just forward, which we've done in, before, but like take a look back at pipe smoking 100 years ago, back during the Roaring Twenties, when flappers were flappers and gentlemen were out there smoking their tuxedo pipes or whatever it might be. You're about to educate us.
But they weren't drinking anything because it was illegal, man.
So yeah, man, this is our look back,
that
right? The
right.
Roaring Twenties, the pipe smoking 20s.
Man, pipe smoking in the 1920s. And you only get this opportunity once, right? And, I mean, unless we live to the 2120s, which I highly doubt. But frankly, I hope not. I hope the Lord comes back before then. it's exciting. We've got, folks that are having their little, 1920s flapper parties. A lot of folks were doing that for, New Year's Eve and that kind of thing, which is fun. You know, it's one of those things that, people look back on, but the 20s were an iconic time, right? I mean, it was iconic for the United States, for the Western world. Just a lot of social upheaval, interesting political, movements, social movements, societal, just things changed. They really did. And it was the precursor to a lot more drama that came down the road, but it was a limitless time, a very ostentatious time, time that was gilded, and that it had a kind of a sense where you could do anything and accomplish anything and consume anything, and kind of sounds familiar. I don't know, but it's it was a time where there was a lot of change, and technology and society, travel, had changed along with that, and man, pipe smoking was right there in the center, because at the time, of course, pipe smoking was king. Right. It was the preferred gentlemanly way to consume tobacco. Of course, the 1920s had a lot of progress for women in society. And so it filtered into their lifestyle as well. But let's think about the 20s, just, stepping back a little bit. More people in the United States in 1920s began living in cities than in rural areas. So it was the first time in American history where more people lived in cities than they did in the country, which, if you think about it, that's pretty amazing, right? I mean, this is we were kind of transitioning from an agrarian to more industrial society. We'd been doing that since the, late 19th century on into the early 1900s. But this is the first point where you've got actually a majority of people are living within urban areas. And so, there's kind of a sophistication that comes with that. People are, swapping their trends more regularly and more often. And, there's more mass advertising and more people consuming similar products and hanging out in the same places and all this stuff. It's just a more urban lifestyle.
Yeah.
The nation's wealth, the wealth of the nation, the United States, during the 1920s, the period from 1920 to 1929, the nation's wealth doubled. And so think about that. Like, you've got a country that is kind of coming online. It was a victor and very important factor in the World War I, which gave it a lot of international prestige. A lot of banking finance money kind of came into the American market, and it created a lot of affluency. And so all of a sudden you've got this affluent society. Folks are living closer to each other now with the urban lifestyle. And so you've got more consumers. It's a consumer society. And then think about, okay, we've got these images in our mind. Now think about the reality that this is the advent of the motion picture and of radio, right? Mm-hmm. And so during this same exact period when all this new affluence and connectivity, mass marketing is happening, now we've got the ability to broadcast. And so folks are, listening to the same radio programs and watching some of the same actors in motion pictures, without the sound, and it's just, so folks are taking the same cues, even though they might live worlds apart, right? And it,
wow.
it, we, yeah. it, we we take that for granted now, obviously, because things are so, internationally, intertwined with our media. But you know, back then, this was a new development. And so people buying, the same brands in, if you lived in Jackson, Mississippi, that, was a one-horse town or whatever at the time, if you had a radio, you were going to be more plugged in things that were happening in places like Atlanta or Nashville or maybe even Chicago and New York. And so all of a sudden you're hearing and understanding what life is like there, and maybe thinking about, well, if they're consuming those things, I want to consume those things. Or if they're traveling to these places, I want to travel to these places.
Early viral ability of media.
Exactly. It's so interesting. Yeah. And so think of all that, right? All that we just talked about. And then think about how that all of a sudden affects the smoking culture. And again, of the period, pipe smoking was king, right? And so, very image focused, very a lot of new affluency, a lot of all of a sudden there's more connectivity with other people, and so you're wanting to stand out in the crowd, which
make that statement
is really you want to make a statement. You're kind of pushing the luxury kind of lifestyle and these type of things, and that's kind of what we're talking about here. And so, just think about how quickly that change happened. And then all of a sudden it's, beginning to influence the pipe smoking world. And so, you had small makers before this, that were making pipes, a lot of, local pipe artisans that would do this and that. But all of a sudden you've got folks that are traveling more regularly between Europe and the United States. And, the heyday, the early, earlier days of some of the world's great pipe artisans, particularly we think about Dunhill, which we'll talk more about in a second. But you've got exposure from some American affluent people to those things. They occasionally bring some of this stuff home, and then it finds a place in the American market that needs to be tapped for that.
It's interesting. I have not hid this fact. I am a fan, if you will, of a certain show called Downton Abbey. This has been discussed, and there are several who listen to this podcast who are also fans of such a thing. And a good section of that show takes place during the 20s, but from a British perspective, and they talk a lot about how they're perceiving both American modernized trends, but also the annoyance of prohibition. At one point, I think one of the characters goes overseas, and he just talks about how awful it was being in America where he couldn't drink. Because the British can't not drink. It's just not in their culture. It's not in their nature. It's impossible to do. But I do remember very specifically there was almost a switch once they started entering into the 20s, not just in terms of the cultural look in terms of the dresses and the hair and that kind of thing. But suddenly a lot of people were smoking, and it wasn't just these high end cigars that the tops, so to speak, were enjoying. But you go everywhere, and now everybody's got a cigarette, everybody's smoking and that sort of thing. But there was a clear determination to kind of picture these two separate lifestyles of how the upper class was enjoying their tobacco versus the underclass. In the midst of the 20s as well.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think there was that, right? That everyone had access to the marketing of this stuff, though, and so you had some of your most famous periodicals, right? Were had advertisements in there from young companies like a Dunhill, but brand new companies at the time, like a name we're all familiar with, K Woody, which came out in 1919, and then evolved some, and then the mid 20s was really known as K Woody. But imagine flipping through the Saturday Evening Post, right? You're in 1927. You've got your smoking jacket on, and maybe you're in your library of your house wearing your bathrobe or whatever, and you're flipping through the Saturday Evening Post, and there's their there's an advertisement for K Woody, and maybe maybe a very early Clark Gable is in the advertisement or something like that. It's kind of interesting. So yeah, and
what would old Clark Gable be saying to you in the said advertisement there, John David?
I probably would be saying something like, to pick up a pipe, it's good for your health.
All the good doctors I know.
Exactly. And they were. It's really funny. You think about famous pipe smokers during the 1920s, and you know, it was such a time of, I mean, think about it. We just got out of the war, right? World War One, which was, you know, the most devastating thing the world had ever seen up to that point. And some would argue has still ever seen. And so you had all these people that were kind of scarred by that, but they were young folks that were, you know, felt really limitless. These are folks that have come back from after seeing the world and been exposed to a lot of different things, and they wanted to, you know, this kind of American spirit of, you know, creating the life that they wanted, and, you know, are now cultured and connected to other people. And so you had a lot of folks that were at the beginning of their career who are all, you know, many of whom are household names now. Folks like Clark Gable, who was there at the very beginning in the 20s. And silent films. The very early career of Cary Grant was in the 1920s. Earl Hines, the jazz musician, famous jazz musician. We had authors like, you know, early works of people like Ernest Hemingway, you know, Lewis and Tolkien getting their start during the 20s at Oxford, you know, in teaching roles there, kind of developing their style, developing their, you know, narratives and their worldview and, you know, those kind of things. We even had, you know, folks like Douglas MacArthur, right, who was, I believe, in his 40s at the time. He was the leader of West Point Military Academy and, you know, kind of influencing the next generation of people that would lead us into the next World War. And all the people I just mentioned, they were young. They were like young professionals during this time, right? These are folks that were, you know, excited to be in this era at the beginning of their, you know, career, and you know, the world was kind of their oyster type thing. And it was a wealthy time. There was a lot of movement. You could do whatever you wanted, and you know, a lot of new affluence and connectivity. And so, you know, these people were, you know, the most famous pipe smokers in the world, and they were, you know, they were all hopeful. And energetic and creating new things. It's funny, you know, looking back on pipe smokers of that era, you know, there are a few older ones that we know, and of course they were very important. People like Herbert Hoover, who eventually during the late 20s became president of the United States, but the famous astronomer Edwin Hubble, who you know, was key in you know, understanding, I'm probably going to butcher this, but understanding the expansion of the universe and the distance between galaxies and some of these things, and of course, who the Hubble Space Telescope was named after, and then the most famous scientist probably of all time, Albert Einstein. You know, in the late 1910s, he had kind of was validated as, okay, his theory of general relativity was proven. They did these tests, and it was proven. And so, you know, in the 20s, he's the old timer by this point, right? Or at least in his later career, I guess. And so by this point, he's like, you know, established. He's on the, you know, front page of the New York Times and Time Magazine, which is new at this time also. And, right. You know, and smoking his pipe, those pictures of him on his boat and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, just really, really interesting stuff. So the influence of pipe smoking there, you know, if you're seeing these people on the silver screen, you know, talking on the radio, you know, in print ads and, you know, one of your favorite, you know, publication like, you know, Harper's or, you know, the Saturday Evening Post or something like that, all of a sudden, man, you're going to be really influenced by that. And, and so it was, you know, it was everywhere. It was, you know, something that people could do that was still legal, since Prohibition was in effect. And so, you know, it's like, well, we got to find our vices somewhere, right?
Well, and I mean, there's like you say, there's a communal ritual that goes into smoking a pipe, just as there is, you know, having a cocktail or a beer or whatever the preferred beverage would have been had it been legal. Of course, moonshine, I suppose, was the actual preferred beverage at the time.
That's right. A lot of the you know, stuff you'd make in your bathtub or whatever.
Right.
Yep. But you know, pipe smoking, it was obviously you had readily available pipes. It was before many of the drugstore brand and everyman pipes had come out, but K Woody was brand new on the market during this season. And so as we mentioned before, you could go get you a really nice high quality quality briar pipe made from K. Woody, and it had that signature clover stem there on the stem. And you know, this the pipe was so iconic that it eventually led to you know, the inspiration of other brands as well, things like Yellow Bowl and Dr. Graybo that came later, that you know, kind of mimicked that K. Woody quality. Of course, Missouri Meerschaum continued to explode. We've got a pipe company that by this time was well established, you know, a 50-year-old company by this time. But it had, you know, it reached into new markets, and folks found corncob pipes novel and interesting. And so they expanded as well. And of course, you know, with commerce going worldwide, that was an opportunity for them too. You know, for folks in other parts of the world who had just recently been exposed to American things because of the war, now they're all of a sudden getting these American pipes, right? Man, I'm smoking a pipe made out of a vegetable. This is fascinating, you know? And
from America, is it? Oh, oh, simply amazing. Corn. They're smoking
corn. What is this
they're
called?
Smoking it in corn now.
And then, of course, you know, with an accent like that, we can't miss the opportunity to talk about Dunhill, which, of course, this was probably, you know, the 1920s was probably the most iconic decade for Dunhill. Now, that's saying a lot. That might be a stretch, but it's probably not too much of a stretch. If you think about the opulence of the 20s, the you know, the focus on affluence and this new new bourgeois that was kind of created in the Western world. And, you know, Dunhill was ripe for expansion, and of course they did. In 1922, they came to the New World. They opened their first brick-and-mortar shop in Toronto and then in New York. And so imagine you've got these, you've had, you know, your real affluent people that have gone before this time to Europe. I mean, imagine how expensive it was to go to Europe back in the day.
Sure.
And, you know, they might have come back with a Dunhill or a Sheraton pipe. And, you know, boy, wouldn't someone else affluent in New York really like to get their hands on one of those, right? And, but they can't because, you know, not everybody, even the wealthy, could go to Europe. Well, all of a sudden, Dunhill comes to the United States. And so, man, just an explosion in the you know, upper classes of really premium luxury brands. As a matter of fact, you know, the you know, Dunhill realized this. Alfred Dunhill realized, man, this is, you know, we've got an opportunity here. And so they expanded into you know, things like watches and the distribution of fountain pens and, you know, all these things, which frankly now Dunhill is known more for today than they are pipe smoking, which is kind of interesting.
Right.
But,
yeah.
So really saw a lot of that. But imagine, you know, Dunhill coming to America. You know, it's probably not quite on the same scale, but think about like when China got the iPhone for the first time, right? You know,
sure.
You had
game
like
changer.
this class of, you know, people that in this huge country that's growing, lots of opportunity, a lot of new middle class people with, you know, more disposable income than they've ever had. They really want to, you know, be like, you know, their American counterparts or whatever. So as soon as they can get their hands on the iPhone, it just explodes, right? And so and to some extent, we saw that happen in the pipe world, which is just so interesting. You know, folks on this side of the pond couldn't get enough of these Dunhill pipes. And it was timely for Dunhill too, because they had patented their shell finish, the shell briar finish, in 1917 with that really, we talk about it, the beautiful gnarly sandblast on the outside of that Algerian briar. And so it roared into the market and expanded quite a bit. So it's really interesting. You know, you had the explosion of pipe smoking all the way from, you know, the more affordable end of the market, the everyman market, on into the luxury market, and it became an iconic thing. And you know, it's one of those things that going into the 1930s, you know, kind of these were people that a lot of them got their career started in the 20s, their worldview formulated in the 20s, their, you know, their place in the world was beginning to solidify in the 20s, and it propelled them into the 30s and 40s with their pipe in their hand, and hence the most you know, famous pipe smokers in the world.
Wow, man, that's crazy. I mean, you think about some of those guys too that you mentioned earlier on that were kind of getting their start in that era as being just kind of young, relative unknowns.
Yeah,
you know, like Tolkien, yeah, being kind of a young. Did you ever? You never watched the document or the not? It's not a mockumentary. I guess the biopic that they did on Tolkien.
I didn't. I'm familiar with what you're talking about, but no, I haven't seen it.
I caught it, like, you know, originally, I don't know if we ever mentioned this on the show, but we had an intention to do an episode where we reviewed the movie, but then the movie got, like, no traction. Like, nobody was talking about it. There was no, like, marketing push for it at all. I'm like, well, okay. But I ended up seeing it on a plane, and it was really, I thought it was really good. I enjoyed it for what it was. I know the Tolkien estate didn't necessarily bless it or whatever, but, you know, I thought it was really good. But the thing that I find so fascinating is just the concept of seeing these people that don't yet know how big their impact is going to be.
And like, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, just whenever you look into the past, you know, we always see people through the lens. I mean, you mentioned, of course, Einstein being kind of a, an elder statesman at this point. And so at that point they, you know, the people have kind of turned into his favor and that sort of thing. So, you know, there's a different perspective there, but somebody like Tolkien who just did not know at that point the way that he was going to in some aspect change the world.
It's crazy.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it almost makes me kind of wonder about now, like who are the people now, who are the pipe smokers now that are, I'm going to be the ones that are talked about years down the line.
It's true. And to think about that, you're exactly right, folks. You know, we had our best of episode last week, and man, it was just really fun to talk about all the awesome things that happened in the industry in 2019. And if you didn't listen to it, I'd encourage you to go listen to that. But, you know, who are among those people that that we named and mentioned, who are the ones that are going to be truly the standard bearers, you know, going forward into the next 20, 30 years? You know, the brain trust of the pipe world is being created right now. And I don't know.
Man,
for us,
wow.
It's exciting to see that, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Man, fascinating stuff. You know, so the Roaring Twenties, man, before we kind of transition, I'm just kind of curious. If you lived during the Roaring Twenties, Prohibition, would you?
Would I?
I mean, you know, we're both Mississippi guys. I'm just wondering if would we adhere to the law? Would we, dabble on the side?
I don't know. I mean, I think it depends on how. It depends on who your friends are, right? And how
sure,
big.
Sure, sure. I mean, that's part of it.
If they've got some, some land that's like hard to get to, and I don't know, maybe fancy shotguns to defend yourself. I don't know. I could see myself maybe getting into it. It'd be very hard to put down. I know that.
Yeah. Have you had moonshine before? Out of curiosity,
I have. You know, the funny thing is, of course, nowadays they, you know, the concept of moonshine is popular, and so they actually market this stuff in the store that they call moonshine. But the, you know, the proof on it is still like, you know, 90% or something. It's not, you know, the moonshine that, you know, that folks, you know, grew up thinking about, knowing about, that their uncle made in their, you know, bathroom kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, this is the stuff that could, you know, take lead paint off the wall, right?
right.
And
right,
so,
right.
I actually have consumed some of that before. And likely won't ever again.
Right, exactly. All right. I was just curious.
Yeah, have you ever had real moonshine? Not some, you know, bougie stuff that they sell in a, you know, fancy mason jar that you get at you know, Whole Foods or something, but like the real thing.
The stuff that you can clean your carburetor out with.
Right.
No, I have not had the opportunity. I would be willing to, you know, take a swig if ever given the opportunity.
Yeah.
Just to try it. But you know, from everyone I know, I had a buddy who
we are talking about something that is still illegal, right? So let's just be clear on that.
Yeah, just to be clear, I have not. That's
right.
That's good that I said that. But yeah, so it is. I was just curious. But you know, the great thing is, man. You know, the extremes that people went through to get to try to find quality alcohol is just it's just incredible. But the reality is, you don't have to go through extremes for quality, especially in the pipe world. Especially if you're looking for a good quality corncob pipe from our friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
That is exactly right, man. And of course, Missouri Meerschaum in the 1920s had a lot of expansion, a lot of growth, and it was, you know, key to their becoming worldwide. Their distribution through that time period, and one of the pipes that you know, did not exist in the 1920s, but did exist probably eventually in the heart of one of the 20s most famous you know, pipe smokers is the Shire pipe, and that of course was inspired by the Middle Earth universe of J.R.R. Tolkien. The Shire Cobbett pipe, this was a pipe that they came out with a few years ago, and it has been extremely popular. It retails for $25.99, and it is one of the more expensive Missouri Meerschaum pipes, but there's a reason for that. The artisanship and the quality of this particular pipe is truly over the top. It's a very well put together pipe, incredibly high quality acrylic stem with a beautiful nickel band and a really nice kind of blackened finish. It's just a beautiful acorn shaped pipe, and my favorite of all the different Hobbit-inspired universe pipes from Missouri Meerschaum. So it's got a medium to full-size bowl. It's perfect for that everyday smoke and a longer stem to cool it down some. So check it out. You can get it straight from the source, corncobpipe.com. If you go there, and they've got all their pipes listed, and you can get the Shire Cobbett pipe from them today.
Love those Cobbett pipes, man. And hey, if you've got one, smoke it this week. Take a picture of yourself doing it. Tweet it out. We'll retweet it. It's a great way to let the good folks at Missouri Meerschaum know you appreciate them for sponsoring this show.
Pipe question of the week.
All right, man. Pipe question of the week this week coming into us from Charlie. Charlie says, greetings, John, David, and Bo. Oh, man, I'm so excited to read this because it's a question we keep getting and we will continue to get. And I you know what? I'm with Charlie on this one.
That's fair. So, no, that's good.
All right. Not to tip the bean can here, but here's what he said. He says, greetings, John, David, and Bo. Just listened to this week's or the previous week's CSR podcast discussing aging and keeping tobacco. I know this is a topic that has been beaten to death. John, David talked of coin style tins vacuum sealed, saying that they should be opened and jarred because those seals don't hold. My question is, do I start opening the roughly 100 tins I have and start putting them in jars? Granted, some blends and same blends and age could go 2 tins to a 8 ounce jar, or could I get a vacuum seal and seal a few of the tins in a bag? Also, what about an 8 ounce Esoterica bags? Many leave as is. Others say open and jar them. Keep up the great work. Again, that is from listener Charlie. I know, like, listen, man, I'm right here with Charlie because I got home. I went through all of my pipe tobacco, and I think I even sent you like a big picture of like, so should you I did. Tear all these tins, like jar all these tins?
Yeah, it was so funny. We had a really good, I believe it came out in December, right? An episode about, aging tobacco and kind of the art of that, best practices and all that kind of stuff. And,
that's right.
You know, and folks since then have been flooding us with questions, right? And a lot of the questions are similar, but it's the thing about it is everyone's circumstance is just a little bit different. So, Charlie is saying here, man, I've got, you talk about opening your vacuum seal tins and putting them in jars. Well, what do I do? I've got 100 of them, man, your mileage may vary. You have may, because of the humidity in your area or, whatever, you may have had better luck, with, those vacuum seal tins staying sealed, over a longer period of time. If that's the case, I mean, maybe you keep most of them in the tin. For me personally, as someone who, doesn't collect a lot of tobacco, but who, buys stuff, smokes it, buys some more, for me, I will age some, but, specifically, I'm not a big hoarder, I guess. And so, right. I don't know. For me, they're going in mason jars, but, man, if you've got 100 tins, I mean, that's, you're going to buy Walmart out of mason jars in multiple counties. Like, so I don't know. I mean, I think it's a personal preference. You may want to put some in jars and leave some in the tin. You could even date them and then open them up in 5 years and compare them, right? See how they, how they age differently. I promise you, if it's a Virginia or most English blends, they will have aged differently, at that point. But, I think that's it. What you did mention here, now this is a good idea. Some folks will vacuum seal a tin in a bag. And so you actually put the whole tin in a vacuum seal bag and vacuum sealed, and that way you're not using a jar. You're not removing it from the tin. It's actually, you're vacuum sealing something that's already been vacuum sealed, right? It's almost like like wearing a belt and suspenders at the same time. And that's a great way to go. I've seen folks preserve high dollar tins that way. I think that would be fine. 8 ounce Esoterica bags, I would leave them in there. For me, that's those are pretty foolproof. I think they're a good way to store those. I think you should just probably leave it in there. You could take them out and put them in a jar, but I think within that, I think that's Mylar. I can't remember the material, but I think they're probably fine in there. Some of the larger tins, the 100-gram tins that come from companies like Solani or Sam Gaywith or in the past Peterson and Rattray's, they are not vacuum sealed, even though they are tins. And so you may want to take those out and put them in a tin as soon as you buy them, regardless. So your mileage may vary. You're going to have to kind of make decisions on your own for this type of stuff. But, I think the safest way to go, in my opinion, is to put it into a jar from the vacuum seal tin. But are you going to do that 100, 200, 300 times? I don't know, man. Maybe do a few of them that way and gamble on the rest. I mean, I don't know, but good luck. let us know what you do, Charlie. Let us know what you do. if it were me, in a perfect world, I would jar all of them. But yeah, I don't have 100 tins of tobacco sitting back. I tend to go through them more regularly than that. I'm surrounded by tins all the time, but most of them are for sale. And I'll pick up a tin here. I'll smoke through it. I'll go get me another one. I've got some tins put back and some that I've jarred that are vacuum sealed and this type of thing. But if you've got that kind of quantity, you may have to get creative, and you've probably got some hard decisions to make. So just do the best you can, and let us know what you decide.
Oh, that's a great question, Charlie. I know it probably speaks to a lot of people. Certainly spoke to me, so I appreciate that. And hey, if you've got a pipe question of the week, send it in, show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quick fire with the Squire.
All right, quick fire questions.
Ow!
All right, man, we got some quick fire questions in. These are coming in from DJS. These are the New Year's edition. Appropriate, all things considered. You ready for this?
Yep.
Okay, here we go. New Year's resolution: starting a good habit or dropping a bad habit?
Starting a good habit.
Oh, that's, yeah. Now that's that always seems easier. Maybe.
I don't know. They're both pretty hard.
Depends on what it is. Yeah, for me, I'm more of a dropping a bad habit. In this instance, I'm doing like a pretty hard fast for the next 3 months, and I decided to I didn't want to call it a New Year's resolution because it's not going to last all year. But so dropping a lot of stuff that I normally eat.
Cool.
And but as part of that, juicing as well. So starting a good habit there.
Oh,
so
that's cute.
There you
yeah.
go. Yeah. No, it's disgusting. Long-term goals or short-term goals?
For me, it's short-term goals. Okay. Right now. Yeah, short-term goals. Yeah.
Achievable. That makes sense. I think it's a bit of both. It depends on what your definition of a long-term is. If you consider a year long, then long-term goals. If you don't consider that long, then short-term. Catching up or reading or catch up on exercise?
I'm going to go with catching up on reading.
Hmm. Okay.
Catching up on exercise is typically bad for my knees.
Well, that is true, especially in Belhaven. Right. That neighborhood is it's great if you want to like push yourself in running. It's terrible if you want to have knees into your 60s. So that is true. I'm probably more catching up on exercise. There are a good number of books that are on my kind of like to hit list. But the thing is, most of the time I quote unquote read is book on tape while I'm running. So there
yep.
you go.
Yep.
Try new blends out of your comfort zone or revisit old cellared favorites.
Trying new blends. I have kind of, because of all the life changes over the past year, been smoking more things I'm comfortable with, things that I like, putting on a comfortable cozy sweater type of thing, but that's kind of a thing I've been maybe not a New Year's resolution, but something that I've been doing more consciously now has been that new, you know, just experimenting, trying new things. And so I think that'll be my MO for a while.
Okay. All right. You know, just like before, it's both, because trying new blends is also going through my old cellared favorites. Not necessarily favorites in that I've actually smoked them, but I've got a ton of blends that are in my cellar that I have yet to smoke. So, trying new blends, I guess, is more in line there. That said, when Frogmorton's an option, there is no other option.
Yep.
Experimental, Squire Selects, or stick with the brown water. There's a winky. Now, hang on. Before we answer this, I want to address something. There's a winky emoji that goes on to this, which means that he is implying some kind of Squire Select that we have discussed in the past, but we have made a resolution on the show never to bring up again.
He may not be talking about that. He might just be talking about, the experimental Squire Selects, like, doing something different, like gin or, vodka. Or,
that's not
or
what he's
talking
about. You know what
that
he
nature,
means.
You know? I don't know. So for now, I think our, I don't know if it's a resolution, but for now, I see lots of brown water on the horizon.
Yeah, lots of brown water. Come to the Lent to Remember. All right, man. Well, that's going to be the questions from DJS. Great quickfire questions. Great New Year's resolution, too. So thank you for those. And hey, if you've got some quickfire questions for us, be sure to send those in. Show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
Listener feedback coming in. D-Love 16. On iTunes, John David and Bo make a great team and always provide quality content for my travels. It's great to fire up a bowl and listen while I drive. Listening to the show even convinced me to make the trek to the shop this past summer. Thanks for the show, and I look forward to each new episode. Well, thank you so much, D-Love. That's awesome.
Man, that's great. So glad you got to come by. Jeremy Diltz says, hello, Country Squire hosts. Love the show, one of my favorite podcasts. I also love Japanese anime and came across a 12-minute animated short film that won an Academy Award. I thought you might enjoy it for the way the director implemented the pipe in this film. Enjoy.
Yeah, so Jeremy, he actually sent us a link to this as well, which we'll be sharing on social media. It's a very, very artistically done. Out of curiosity, John David, something I think is good to point out, though, before you watch it, because he mentions that he's a love of Japanese anime. And when I see Japanese anime, I kind of have a certain, like, style, probably because westernized and everything else, like a style that I presume that to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the Pokemon and the Goku and
that's kind of what I see in my mind too.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is not that. This is not like a Super Saiyan smoking a pipe and it's like lighting up in different colors or anything like that. So this is, it is more of a kind of art, not that that's not art, but like more of a,
it's got a different feel to it, like a more dramatic or something.
Almost like a painting come to life. So not as cartoony, I guess, would probably be the way to say it. But you know what? I'll put it out there. Let y'all kind of interpret
it. Let us figure it out. Okay.
Exactly. But very cool. Thank you so much for sending that to us, Jeremy. And actually, anytime that y'all see like the pipe show up in any media, let us know. We love seeing it on television. Actually, there's a movie that I'm blanking on that I meant to actually write down on my phone, but I forgot to do it, where there was a character who was prolifically and constantly smoking a pipe. And I was like, this is content. I'm kidding, of course. But anyway, yeah, if y'all see anything, let us know. And we'd love to share that as part of the listener feedback. And thank you all for sending in your very valuable feedback and spending your valuable time with us. And hey, if you want to help support the show, head over to patreon.com/countrysquireradio, where you can become a club member. Help us make it into this wonderful year of 2020 even bigger, even better. And again, just another shout out for the Lunt to Remember. It's going to be a blast. I mean, come on.
Yes.
This is going to be like, I don't even think we realize how amazing this is going to be. Like, this is going to be the pilgrimage of all pilgrimages. I don't want to overhype it, but I think it's becoming that.
It's got that potential. It sure does.
It's got the potential for real, man. I cannot wait. It's going to be a blast. So join us there. You can also keep up with us throughout the week. I'm at @TheRealBoYork on Twitter.
I'm at @JohnDavidCole, or you can get us at the shop @_CountrySquire.
@Squire Radio is the show's handle, but all that information and more can be found at countrysquireradio.com. John David, we went roaring back into the 20s for this one.
We did, man. I feel like roaring forward into the 20s. This is exciting.
I agree, man. Well, hey, well, it's time to hang up the flapper. What do guys wear? I just remember the flappers. Like that's the thing I remember. Yeah,
you
got to
wear
20s.
The, you know, the little fedora, top hats, right? And the like a fedora and those collars that are really, really tall, you know, on your tweed jacket kind of thing. And yeah, I don't know, stuff like that.
There you go. So basically what everybody's wearing right now anyway.
Exactly. It's coming back, baby.
We've been in the roaring 20s for a while. But anyway, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.